of the people. Thank you for joining us live. And to our fans, I apologize. Erica had to remove herself for today, but she'll be back next week. But I want to talk about Triggered. Last week, there was a dance competition in Seattle, Washington, where one of the teams that was participating was precluded or asked not to compete because the uniforms that they wore triggered, quote unquote, some people in the audience and made them feel unsafe and threatened. It's the Borderline Dance Company, so much for the name, but I want to show you a picture of the uniform. Lord Benjamin, if you can put that picture up, let's show the audience. So this is the Borderline Dance Company. And if you notice, their uniforms are the American flag. So it's the American flag that triggered the people hosting it. It was the Emerald City Hoedown, and it was the Rain Dance Company, which is some LGBTQ company. And they were asked or told that they could not compete because of their uniforms. So we've now gotten to the point where the American flag triggers people to feel unsafe. I guess since we now live in an America where on U.S. soil you can chant death to America and that's okay, then the symbol of America and its freedoms triggering people shouldn't come as a surprise to most people in all of this. But let's remember where most of this started, right? We go back to Michelle Obama, former first lady, who said, "I never felt proud of my country until my husband was elected." So disrespecting your country, those traditional values, those American freedoms, of course, they're going to trigger people. But let's talk about the whole concept of being triggered. So what is it? So triggered means that what you say or what you do is going to make me feel unsafe, right? That's the whole concept here of triggering. So my first question in all of this is, why are the Democrats the only ones or the progressives that are allowed to be triggered? Right? Back in the summer of 2020, Black Lives Matter protests, remember those, mostly peaceful? I felt threatened by those. I felt unsafe. I felt uncomfortable. The defund the police protests, right? I felt unsafe. We all felt unsafe. We all felt uncomfortable. We were triggered, were we not? And as recently as today and all over the country, you see these pro-Hamas, anti-Israel protests going on all over the country to greater or lesser degree. They shut down the Golden Gate Bridge yesterday, which, by the way, is a federal crime. Does anyone think anyone's going to jail for this? They shut down the access roads to O'Hare Airport. There have been protests, some violent, some not, chanting death to America around the country. So why is it that only the Democrats are the ones that can be triggered in all of this? And if you really want to take this to its logical extension, the political show trials of Donald Trump. Now, I don't care whether you're for Trump or you're against Trump or what you think of Trump, right? But these political trials for a political opponent, which are basically, no pun intended, trumped up charges, don't harbor well for America. Because if it can happen to Donald Trump, it can happen to any of us. And I don't care what party you're in, but that should be a concern for everyone. We've gone to a point where it's upside down. Because remember, we grew up with, most of us, sticks and stones may break my bones, but names will never hurt me, right? The concept for that is that it doesn't matter what you say about me, what I think about myself, what I feel about myself, that I'm responsible for my own feelings of safety, has now been inverted. It's now our responsibility to make sure everyone else doesn't feel threatened or everyone else doesn't feel unsafe or uncomfortable. Remember, this goes back to what we've always talked about, which is safe spaces on campus, and then the whole campus had to be safe, all the other nonsense that this wokeism has been throwing at everyone. So it's now at the point where the other person is responsible for my feelings, as opposed to me being responsible for my own feelings. Not only is that a child's response, that's a victim response, and we've become a victim culture in all of this. Let's not forget, the Constitution of the United States has enshrined checks and balances to protect the minority against what was concerning potentially the tyranny of the majority, right? But it didn't give minority rights that trumped, no pun intended, or perhaps pun intended, rights over the majority. We've now come to the point where it has become the tyranny of the minority, that the minority in this country who are now wielding the levers of power, thank you, President Barack Obama, because now they wield the levers of power in government, they wield the levers of power in academia, they wield the levers of power in the culture wars, in the media, right? And we can go back to the whole NPR thing that was just in the news, which anybody really surprised that NPR has zero Republicans, is totally Democratic leaning? I mean, tell me something we haven't known for 10 years. Right? Just ridiculous. But understand, when you hear the word triggered, this is all about power. Who has it, who wants to keep it, and who doesn't want to give it up? And we really have come to the point, and you see it in the pro-Hamas protests in the streets. Doesn't matter. They're not going to enforce federal law. The term triggered, next time you hear it, understand that it's about power. And in this case, it's the power that now the tyranny of the minority has over the rest of the country, and they don't want to give it up. To that dance team, the borderline dance team or dance troop, whatever they're called on the West Coast, God bless you. You keep standing up for America. You keep standing up for patriotism. And I understand, having just looked online, that you were invited to a dance competition or a dance convention to represent America in Normandy in 2025. Good for you. Triggered. Just remember the word. And that's the monologue. Now, joining us today to discuss triggered, but really to discuss the protest and discuss what's going on internationally, is Dr. Lori Fineman, Florida's East Coast voice. She recently came back from Israel, was on the ground there, and I think her perspective is a little different than what you've been hearing in the media. So joining us now from somewhere in South Florida, Dr. Lori Fineman. Lori, welcome to Of the People.
Welcome. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. I'm so excited to be here. So what a monologue that was, Robert.
Well, hopefully my monologue didn't trigger you and make you feel uncomfortable, unsafe, and threatened.
Well, it's my responsibility to regulate myself. And I am outraged by it, but have to learn to tolerate my feelings and my actions accordingly.
And therein lies the difference, because I don't tolerate my own feelings or own actions, which is why I am in the seat that I am in. But you are the former president, if I got the title right, of the JCC of South Florida. You've been intimately involved in you know, Jewish affairs domestically for years. You just went to Israel before the missile attack. Yes. Or the attack by Iran. Why did you go to Israel, and why did you go specifically then?
So, you know, Israel, we consider a home for us. We feel very much aligned with the Jewish people there. And we decided to go because we had such a meaningful experience there over the summer that we thought it would be important for us and our children to go back and see what's really going on over there. And we decided to go over there for spring break, and people thought we were absolutely crazy, but we really wanted to get a sense of what we were seeing on the media was true, because when we would speak to our friends over there, it seemed a little bit different. So we really felt that we wanted to go there, support the economy, support the people, and see with our own eyes what had happened to our home. So we did.
And I think my first question for you is, the narrative in the media here is that Israel is unsafe and most people don't want to go. Did you feel safe when you were there?
Totally. We felt 100% safe. And we were probably in some of the quote unquote highest risk areas. We spent 3 days touring, and forgive the terminology that I'm going to be using. I'm going to try to speak to your people, but they don't call it this necessarily in Israel, but the West Bank. So we were 3 days in the West Bank.
Back up. So what do they call it in Israel?
Well, sometimes it's, they always call it Judea and Samaria.
Samaria.
One person posed it to us as the East Bank, because it's east of Jerusalem. Not, you know, why would you reference something in Israel that is referenced to Jordan? Just doesn't kind of make sense. If you're living there, then you're giving Jordan all the power rather than your own country. So they call it the East Bank. And so here we call it the quote unquote West Bank, because that's what politically people want to reference it as, because it sets it apart as a part of Israel that is up for debate about whether or not it's Israel or under the reign of someplace else, so, or somebody else.
Well, let's keep in mind, these are also the same people who call it occupied territory, exactly. Ignorant of the fact that 14 years ago, 24 years ago, that Israel withdrew from the West Bank in Gaza, so correct. Named the West Bank in Gaza, and gave them control, and gave the Palestinian population, whether it was through the PLO in the West Bank or whether it was Hamas in Gaza, gave them control of their own destiny, only to, these many years later, launch what I would call a war on October 7th against the Israeli people. I mean, people want to call it a terrorist attack, but it really wasn't. It was an act of war, followed up by the Iranian attack that we just saw over the weekend, which is the first time that a regional power of Iran stature attacks another sovereign country, and not through a proxy war, right? But I want to get back to when you were there. So give us a sense for the people that were there. I mean, sort of there, you know, I will tell people that, you know, your background is a psychologist. I'm not asking you to see it through that lens, but I know you have that sensitivity versus the narrative that's being portrayed in the media of a divided public in Israel. And obviously against the backdrop of people like Senator Schumer, who went on TV and basically advocated for the overthrow of the political administration of a friendly government.
Sure. And when do we have the right to do that to another country's democracy? But whatever, that's a whole nother issue. No, what I saw, and I can only speak to what I saw, is even from the time of June when we were there till now, when we were in there in June, lots of people were discussing the political upheaval, a lot of the protests in Tel Aviv. We were actually caught up in a protest. This was, again, back in June, on some of the social issues and some of the governmental things that were going on. When we got there this time, it was, you didn't see any of that. You didn't hear any of that. If we were with somebody who was in their 20s, or we were with somebody who was in their 60s, if we were with somebody who was religious, if we were with somebody who wasn't religious, everybody could still articulate, well, you know, I don't necessarily support all of it. However, we are a nation right now that has been violated. We have hostages in another area that we need to get free. And therefore, whatever we have to do to come together, we are going to do, and we're going to put our differences aside. And that was across the board what we saw. And it was beautiful. And it was the antithesis of what we're hearing in the media here. So I was there. I also recently read an article that Rick Scott had put together about his journey over there. And he said the same thing. They came together as a united front with one mission and one mission in mind. And that was to get back those hostages and, you know, do what needed to be done a long time previously that everybody tried to peacefully find a solution to. And we've been unable to do that.
Which makes sense. I mean, the thing that I still come back to is Senator Schumer. And you have to know, and I know that you've been around the political world for, you know, a lot of years as well, but there's no way that someone like Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer goes on TV, calls for the overthrow of a friendly government without at least tacit approval from the White House, right? Absolutely. So here you have the Biden White House basically condoning the overthrow of a friendly government,
sure,
while they are in war. In wartime. Yes. That would be, to me, like advocating for the overthrow of FDR when we were fighting the Japanese after Pearl Harbor.
Absolutely.
No one No one asked for a proportionate response, by the way, of the Americans, which ended up with Hiroshima and Nagasaki at the end of World War II after America was violated. But I guess so. My question to you is, and I don't know the time frame for when you were over there or not, but were you over there when Senator Schumer made those comments, or were you already back here?
I was already back here, I believe. I'd have to look at the exact calendar, but I believe, I think he actually made it right before we left. I think we were referencing it when we were there. I'm sorry, my memory is like, when it comes to dates, is horrible and time. I'd have to look, but I'm pretty sure, now that I'm thinking about it, it happened right before we left, because we were talking about it at dinner and how inappropriate it was, how politically motivated it was. And as Jews, and this is the conversation that I have, I at least find myself having in America all the time with my friends, how people are saying how much they support Israel and how they can't believe everything that's happening over there and the divide that's happening in our country. Yet when I know when they go to the polls, they're going to completely abandon Israel on issues such as abortion and some other socially politicized issues. And so are they really supporting Israel? And, you know, I think that's the question. How many times has Biden thrown us, or any person in the administration, thrown Israel under the bus in indirect ways over the last several years, if not, you know, decades? So it's shameful what we're doing.
So I guess my question is, years ago, you know, in the 50s and the 60s, there was always this conventional wisdom politically that we may disagree internally as a country, but at times of war, politics stops at the water's edge. That was America's perspective, you know, during the 50s, during the 60s, I would argue, you know, probably certainly up to the Vietnam War. Did you get any sense in Israel of any, even if people disagree, and even people who would support Israel's right to defend itself as meaning the people of Israel supporting it and coming together as a nation to do that. Was there any sense of a divide there? Because that was the portrayal in the press here, that the Israeli people were divided and Bibi, you know, Prime Minister Netanyahu, doesn't represent the people's will anymore, and therefore he has to go. Was there any sort of sense of a division or lack of support? Because you have, is not the opposition now part of the government with Benny Gantz in there as well?
Yeah, I mean, look, I didn't talk to every single person in the country, but the vast majority of the people, and from what I could see, they were united. I mean, they were able to acknowledge we still have differences. We still don't agree with everything that's going on. But right now, we have to finish this war. And until this war is done, we are a united country. And we are, you know, each and every one of them turned to us and said, why is it that we're losing this PR war? We're all together. And yet what we look like from everybody else in the world is that we're these horrible people. So I don't know if they're driven by having to counteract that that portrayal and propaganda that we are seeing and are creating on our end, or if they're pulled together because of the love and the understanding of what the state of Israel has had to go through since the beginning of time and its existence. And regardless of what it is, each and every one of them serves in their military, which I think is a huge component that is why part of your monologue and those dancers, you know, that's why the American flag, people see that as a trigger. We don't have that. We don't have that allegiance to our country anymore, in part because the people of our country don't fight for our country. They don't have to defend our country. They don't understand the history of our country. We're rewriting it left, right, up and down. Israel understands. They fight. They are part of it. They educate from the beginning by going and experiencing and seeing everything in their country. They learn about how they've been persecuted, how the Jewish people have been persecuted, how Israel has been infiltrated and has been hated for so long. And that, you know, that along with the fact that they were, terrorized literally, and they were just the most horrible things, traumatic and tragic things happened to their friends, their colleagues, their family members. That brought them all together, and they could put some of their political differences aside. Are they permanently aside? No, but this became the main focus, and they had one mission and one mission only. And that's what I saw, was that we're going to rise above for the sake of the bigger or the greater good, and take care of what we need to take care of, because nobody else is taking care of Israel. So we have to do it.
And a common threat usually produces that result, right? I mean,
usually.
Right. Well, not all history doesn't always judge it. It does. History shows that doesn't always happen. But in most instances, when there's a common threat, the people that are under threat usually come together and they put aside their differences. That's what's supposed to happen. The problem is when that doesn't happen, or the problem when you have allies like the United States who are, you know, sending mixed messages at best. And I would argue for political pandering reasons to what I would call the Hamas lobby in the United States, whether that's in Michigan, in Dearborn, where you have in Michigan, I don't know if it was Dearborn or not, I think it was Warren, Michigan, who basically came out and said, we Muslims will murder Jews like sheep.
Yeah.
You should prosecute anyone for a hate crime, because I think that is, again, one of those woke triggering concepts that inverts justice and inverts the law, right? Free speech, we can talk about with a major ally of the United States who, yes, of course, during, and I want to segue to the Iran attack in a second, but during the Iran attack, you know, there was a multinational force, Israel, obviously, we got help from Jordan, of all people, of all countries, United Kingdom, United States in deflecting the missiles. But that doesn't alleviate the fact that now you have Iran attacking Israel directly. When you saw that, what was your reaction? And are you in touch with anyone in Israel about that?
I have been in touch with people in Israel just via WhatsApp. I have not gotten into the throes of it. However, they were sending me live videos of the rockets and the missiles going over them. And you could hear the fear in everybody and the outrage. So to answer that part of the question, I mean, look, we all knew that, or we all anticipated that the North was going to be far worse than the attacks from Gaza, or at least managing Gaza, because their weaponry can actually hit us. Their missiles can actually do some significant damage and cause significant death. But nobody, I think, would have bet the money that Iran was going to come directly. They thought it was going to come through Hezbollah, or that it was going to come through one of their other avenues. So I think this spoke very loudly. I also think that if we're paying attention in America, we bear some of the responsibility. Our administration bears some of the responsibility of this, if not all of it. And I look at the bridge yesterday, or the port of Miami, or what was going on in New York and Chicago, and I sit here and I shouldn't sit here being outraged by this, because I understand how this all came to be, but I'm outraged at the fact that people are turning a blind eye, deaf ear, whatever the saying is, to the reality of this and denying the reality of what is going on that is making it acceptable for Hamas to come in and rape and pillage and torture, and for Iran to send over missiles to Israel. And it's shameful. It really is.
And it is shameful. We do have to go to break real quick. We'll be right back on the other side of the break. Please stay with us. We're with Dr. Lori Feinman, Florida's East Coast voice, about on-the-ground experiences in Israel. We'll be right back on the other side of the break. Hi, I'm Robert Chernin.
And I'm Erica Reddick.
And we are Of the People. You can find us on Rumble. You can find me on Twitter at RB Chernin. And
I am at Erica Reddick.
Look us up. You'll be entertained.
That we guarantee.
Absolutely. She's never wrong.
Ever. Just ask my husband.
Welcome back, of the people, Dr. Lori Fineman, Florida's East Coast Voice. Before we go on, Florida's East Coast Voice, where can they find you? And if they want to communicate with you, how do they find you?
So I'm terrible with all the websites and email addresses, but you can go on to floridaseastcoastvoice.com, and that is the website. You can sign up for our 5-day-a-week newsletter that brings you the most up-to-date news in particularly Palm Beach County, but the state of Florida, as well as some of national news, particularly on Israel and anti-Semitism. You can also go on to X at Dr. Lori 2023 and follow along there as well.
Got it. Thank you so much just for that. So I want to come back to, you had made reference before the break that you felt the Biden administration bore some responsibility and for the situation in Israel, both before the attack of October 7th, before the Iran attack that just occurred over the weekend. And I have certainly been very vocal on that, but I don't want to put words in your mouth. When you say that the Biden administration bear some responsibility, of course, I agree with that, but I wanted to know what you meant by that.
Well, I mean a lot of things, right? The fact that we are sending mixed messages out to the American people, that they're cowtailing to the extreme left for votes in Michigan, the fact that they've given so much money to Iran and funded Iran after so many years that Iran wasn't financially stable enough to do what it is that they're doing. And now they have, billions of dollars to be able to use and supply to Hezbollah, Hamas, anybody else, including making their own weapons. So I do believe that as much as we can sit here and spin anything, as we see in the media all the time, this is something that we are responsible for. And again, using Chuck Schumer to go out there and speak about that and try to slow down and question Israel's intentions and forbid them from doing the things and trying to dysregulate and dismantle their government. All of those are very subtle ways. I mean, some not so subtle ways of bearing a brunt and bearing some responsibility in this.
I would agree. You know, it's interesting that the State Department came out, and of course, who did they blame for the attack by Iran on Israel? I'll give you three guesses.
I'm gonna guess.
The guy's got orange hair.
Yeah, I'm shocked.
So Kirby comes out and blames Trump because Trump withdrew from the Iran nuclear deal, and therefore it's Trump's fault because Iran was so well behaved before because of the nuclear deal. And they sort of omitted the fact that they let the sanctions on Iran expire. But don't worry, the $10 billion we're sending to Iran is going to be used for humanitarian purposes. And let's just assume, for argument's sake, first of all, I think they're full of crap, but because they have no way of knowing that. But let's assume, for argument's sake, that it's correct, that these billions of dollars is going to be used for humanitarian aid. If you needed the $10 billion for humanitarian aid, the $10 billion you already had put aside for humanitarian aid can now go somewhere else, right? Money is fungible, number one, right? Mm-hmm. Number two, let's not forget that this is the country, the Biden administration abstained in the UN vote condemning Israel.
Correct.
Which historically, again, it's not happened. This is the Biden administration whose position, if Israel goes into Rafah to finish the job, so to speak, and destroy Hamas, there, according to Vice President Harris and according to President Biden, there will be quote unquote consequences. Right?
Yes.
Right. So I agree with you that the Biden administration does bear responsibility. And look, the thing I say all the time to people is, in the world of international politics, there are two truths. The first truth is that passivity, or weakness really, breeds aggression, right?
Mm-hmm.
With countries like Iran, and people say that Iran's an Arab country. It's not Arab, it's Persian, right? And Persians are not Arabs, and we can get into sort of, that at some other point. But if you go back, and the Persian people have a history of a great and mighty people, but the current leadership only really acknowledges brute force and power politics. So the first truth is that weakness breeds aggression. But the second truth is in sort of the chessboard of international politics is that when your enemies no longer fear you and your allies no longer trust you, right? Then you're you're into the same situation. Then you're in a bad situation, which we're in right now. And I think Israel is isolated. And I want to bring up one other point, and then there's a video clip I want to get your reaction on. But I want to bring up one other point, which is that it's now Israel is perceived as, like the United States, as a colonial or oppressing or oppressor nation, right? You know, the whole argument of South Africa and Israel's an apartheid country. Speak to that a little bit, because I know you've been on the ground there a lot. I know you go to Israel a lot. You have relations there. And the fact that, you know, speak to the inclusiveness of society and you know, the human rights, civil rights, gay rights. I mean, people just don't understand here when they hear those, I wouldn't even say tropes, but when they hear just blatant fake news about what's going on in Israel and what society there is like.
Yeah, I mean, you go to Tel Aviv and it is an outpouring of just such a beautiful gay culture, right? And you go over into any of these other countries like Iran, I mean, you can't be gay, right? I was joking during all of this when everybody was like, LGBTQ for Palestine. And I'm like, okay, you know what? You're going to go over into Gaza and they're going to kill you because of your sexual orientation. Yeah. So like, people are not even just being rational. What this is about, and this isn't totally answering your question, but what this is about is that two things. One, Israel has tried so many different ways by giving back land, by, trying to work together with, trying to back down from, and they just keep getting attacked and attacked and attacked. You know, when we were there in June, we went through the West Bank, and our friend said to us, you know, when you hear what's happening in Israel over in America, what are you hearing? And we said, oh, you hear about the refugee camps, right? And he's like, what do you guys
the refugee camps in Gaza?
Yeah, in Gaza, in the West Bank, in both, right? Because that's how it's portrayed over here, right? And when you hear about a refugee camp, what is that like? Oh, okay, well, you know, my nieces, nephews, all the people that we were with. Right, poverty, right. Walking barefoot, nothing. Right. And so we drove past what they consider a refugee camp. And what he was showing us was, you know, 6-bedroom homes and, you know, Mercedes, BMW is driving the same thing. And the only way that you could really tell in the West Bank the difference between the Arabs and the Israelis is the color of their license plate. But even that, they still lived in peace, relatively speaking, you know, just like in America, like 90% of us live in peace. There are the outliers, there are the extremes all the time in cities and even, you know, in our suburbs that just for whatever reasons will always be a problem. But the vast majority of people are, you know, relatively kind and generous. And these were people that worked for him. These were people that worked for his family. These were people that he did business with and for. And what's interesting is since that time, not everybody can say that over there. You know, there's a lack of trust now that wasn't there before. There is now, people are looking twice and are suspicious when they see somebody who's Arab that used to be their friend, because what they said was 80% of the people in that area were cheering on Hamas when it happened, which was mind-blowing. These were their friends, right? So what I can say is when I've been there historically, everybody came together, Jews, Arabs, everybody, and for the most part really lived peacefully. Now there's actually a divide that's happening, not amongst the Jewish people, but amongst the Jews And we almost took like a huge step backwards. The other thing was when we went down into the south, we saw where they had infiltrated.
And for people who aren't there, what's the south versus the north? The north is Tel Aviv. The north is Jerusalem.
Yeah, I mean, and even more north of that is would be, yeah, even north of that is, you know, Lebanon, right, and where Hezbollah is, what they consider the south.
So the north, and you're going up the Golan Heights, and you're going, I mean, I've been to correct. Israel, but for our listeners who haven't, you know, we talk about north versus south, and I just wanted to give them some perspective. When we say the north, we're talking about Jerusalem and Tel Aviv, but you go further north to where?
To Golan, to Lebanon, yeah, to some of the kibbutzim that are north, and then you're at the border of Lebanon. And if you go south, and I don't consider, to me, the south, the real south of Israel is like a lot, and that's like the southern tip of it, but they consider the Gaza more
down by the dead, down by the Dead Sea and that, you know, that area.
Yes, but they're referencing Gaza as south, and that's where the infiltration happened. And right around that whole area are kibbutzim. And kibbutzim, for Americans, how we have to understand it is these are the hippies. These are the people who believe in peace. These are the people who came to Israel and wanted no borders. They were shouting from the rooftops, no borders. We want to be friends with the Palestinian Arabs. And yeah. So...
Make love not war.
And so there were people right. there that like were screaming that from the rooftop. One of the hostages that later passed away, she would go into Gaza and pick up some individuals and bring them back to Israel to get medical care. This was obviously somebody who had trust in those that were living in Gaza. Meanwhile, there are about 3,000 people a day who cross over with visas who come into Israel for work. And they oftentimes work in the kibbutzim. And so they help out with whether it's agriculture, whether it's the homes, you know, doing repairs on homes or whatever the case was. It was some of these same individuals who went back into Gaza and gave Hamas the maps of these kibbutzim. So the first things that they did was they took out and killed, burned, tortured, raped, whatever they did to all of the above, to the same people that were sitting here calling for peace. So is this really about peace? Is it really about land? No, we gave them land. We gave them Gaza many, many, many years ago when we pulled out, right? This is not about land. This is not about peace. This is 100% about the ideology that they have that the Jewish state and therefore the Jews should not exist. And it's not just about the Jews. It starts with the Jews. But for your listeners, I think there needs to be some reinforcement that this is not just about the Jews. Once they have the Jews and they have Israel, they're coming for everybody else because it is an ideology that believes that everybody in the world should believe what they believe and they should be in charge, and not just Hamas. I mean, the bigger umbrella of it, but this is their spokespeople for right now. And, you know, I could go further in my conspiracy of thinking that this Hamas was just the appetizer and the distraction for what's going to still yet to be to come. But I'll refrain
and from I would also,
elaborating.
Well, you know, in this show, we have tinfoil hats in the back where you can give you a tinfoil hat and you could wear one along with the rest of us who put on our conspiracy theory tinfoil hats from time to time anyway. Most of the time, I would argue justified. I mean, under the heading of conspiracy theory, I would argue that one of the reasons that Hamas launched the attack when they did is because Israel was about to make formal peace with Saudi Arabia, and Iran couldn't stand that because it would have weakened Iran's position, and it would have created a new dynamic in the Middle East, one of let's call it a millennial of peace, because if Saudi Arabia makes peace with Israel, there's already sort of a detente and peace with Jordan and with Egypt and the United Arab Emirates. And then all of a sudden, Iran is isolated. So yeah, to me, yeah. I mean, again, I can't prove that. But that's what I would argue. The last thing I want to do is I'm going to get in the high sign from Lord Benjamin here. But I want to play this video for you and I want to get your reaction to this. This is former President Obama and what he had to say. Ben, if you could just tee this one up.
If you want to solve the problem, then you have to take in the whole truth. And you then have to admit nobody's hands are clean.
Okay, so here's former President Obama saying that you have to take in the whole truth. No one's hands are clean. Basically, a moral equivalence that the Hamas attack was justified because of Israel's hands aren't clean either. What's your reaction to that?
I mean, I can't tell you how many times I have this conversation. Look, nothing starts in a vacuum. Let's start there. And so, but we can't justify what happened on October 7th. There is no justification. The people came into Israel and burned, tortured, mutilated, and took hostages, not only Israeli hostages, but lest we not forget, there are still American hostages that nobody is speaking about. And if this had happened in any other country, that happened on our soil, there is no way that we would allow anybody to tell us that this was justified, that this was appropriate, that this is not terrorism. It is infuriating to me that there is such hypocrisy, and that this is yet another way that we, with this oppressed and oppressor mentality and this triggering, as you've spoken about, we have set the stage for all of this to happen. And I believe that, I guess when the future comes and the gates of heaven open, I'm not so sure everybody's going there.
Well said. I think what people have to understand, and I was having this conversation with someone a few days ago, 1,300 or so Israelis were slaughtered, murdered brutally on October 7th. The equivalent in the United States would be if someone launched a war against the United States, and instead of 3,000 people dying on September 11th, about 40,000 Americans had died in one attack. Does anybody now look, let's remember what America's response was after being violated on September 11th. Yeah. with when I say only 3,000 dead, I'm not disparaging the dead. I'm just talking about versus 40,000 or the equivalent to what Israel just went through. I don't remember anybody talking about a proportionate response. I don't remember anybody talking about this moral equivalence of, well, we have to tell the whole truth and everyone's hands are dirty here. I don't remember after the United States was attacked in Pearl Harbor that anyone was talking about moral equivalence of the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. So it frankly makes my blood boil when I hear a former president, who I would argue bears direct responsibility in one form or another, that perhaps is for an after hours conversation.
It is.
For how we got here in all of this. And because one man's terrorist is not another man's freedom fighter. I don't care what they say. And as I was saying to someone the other day, Justice Potter Stewart, former Supreme Court justice, early 1900s, when confronted with the issue of pornography, said, "I can't define it, but I know it when I see it." Well, the October 7th attack, obviously not pornographic, but I would call them evil, right? And I can't define evil, but I know it when I see it. And that attack was evil. And if we have lost our moral compass to the point where we can't call out evil when we see it, then I think we've lost, in the West, we've lost our humanity.
But that's what I agree. And that's what we're seeing right now. These people who are protesting, why are they not, they're calling themselves, activists, right? Peace activists, yet they're protesting and they're supporting war from Iran, on American soil. And I sit here and I'm like, you have lost your way. This is not peace activism.
They have not lost their way. We've lost our way because we can't call out evil when we see it. These are the same activists in Chicago. When Iran was
they were cheering missiles into and Israel, hating America.
They were cheering.
Yes. Right.
So
that is not a peace activist. That is war. You are cheering on war, and we are doing nothing about it. We are not calling them out. Our governors, are letting people run the streets free. They're not calling this what it is. And it's, I mean, I'm scared for my children if this moral compass is lost in our country. And look, if it's so bad here, go someplace else. Let's see how good it is.
Well, a lot of them, celebrities on down, if Donald Trump gets elected, are going somewhere else, if you believe their words. The ones that are protesting and chanting death to America will be forcibly removed, and the Bruce Springsteens of the world and Bette Midlers of the world have, and the Shares of the world are leaving if Donald Trump gets elected. By the way, if there wasn't a good enough reason to reelect Donald Trump, to see those people leave the country would be a really good reason to elect Donald Trump as far as I'm concerned. But with that, we'll leave you on the following note. First, I want to thank you for joining us on your busy schedule, just to get some on the ground, really firsthand experience as to what's really going on in Israel versus what the media is portraying and what the media is, the narrative that they're trying to sell us on. But as you know, and as I know, we'll leave with this simple truth. If Hamas or the Palestinians lay down their arms,
I say this,
there would be peace. If Israel lays down their arms and gives up its rights to self-defense,
there'd be no Israel.
There would be no Israel. Mm-hmm. Ladies and gentlemen, we've been talking with Dr. Lori Fineman, Florida's East Coast Voice. Look her up, floridaseastcoastvoice.com, and they can contact you. You're on Twitter again. Where are you?
Dr. Lori 2023 on Twitter, floridaseastcoastvoice.com. You can reach me at Lori at Florida's East Coast Voice. There's going to be a lot more going on that I'm sure going to have to speak about. So
good. And for us, of the people, Robert Chernin, Robert at coalitionforamerica.com, the number 4, america.com. If you look on the banner here, at RB Chernin, bring it on. I can take it. We're going to break. We'll be right back on the other side of the break. Lori Fineman, thank you so much for joining us. I hope you come back on the show again.
Thank you.
Socialism. The goal of socialism is communism. The world is quite familiar with socialism and the horrors socialism has brought with it. It wasn't that long ago. Actually, it's still with us. Socialism creeps into government slowly until it's too late. Socialism, the big lie. Yes, it could happen anywhere. This educational video was brought to you by the American Center for Education and Knowledge and paid for by people like you who care about the future of our democracy. Please help us continue our work educating the American public and consider supporting ASIC by making a tax-deductible donation at asicfund.org.
Hello, welcome back to Of the People. Thank you again to Dr. Lori Fineman, Florida's East Coast Voice, for joining us. You know, when we went to break, folks, we were talking about the narrative that is being pushed on the American people with regards to Israel. But to give you some perspective about what I would call designer news, and I think calling it designer news is being nice about it. There was already the editor, now suspended at NPR, who has now come out and said that the bias in NPR was literally so left-leaning that even when alleged facts were shown to be false, COVID, Russiagate, other things, they never retracted. They just moved on because at that point, it's get Donald Trump at all costs. You have Mika Brzezowski and you have Joe Scarborough, who are now on TV saying that this is all Trump's fault because they've polarized the country. He's polarized the country and he's made people angry. You have Katie Couric, who's on Bill Maher. But here, let me give you another good example of how insidious and how nuanced this becomes, right? So the Democrats are going to run on abortion for November of 24. And they're going to make women in the country fear that if Donald Trump gets reelected, there will be no abortions anywhere in the country. And to my brethren in the Jewish community who are having their moments of cognitive dissonance, as a Jewish woman, if you're out there and you're listening, you're going to have to decide between Israel or abortions. Good luck with that choice, right? But here's the narrative. So USA Today, Donald Trump comes out and basically says that it's state's choice. Now that Roe v. Wade is overturned, it's up to each state individually because obviously the Constitution doesn't reference abortion. So when he comes out and Trump comes out and says, He affirmed his support for in vitro fertilization, and he emphasized support for states determining their own laws for abortion so long as there are exceptions for rape, incest, and life of the mother. Sounds reasonable, right? So USA Today's first headline comes out and basically says that Trump opposes a national abortion ban and will leave it up to the states. The Biden team on a media call calls out USA Today that that's an untruthful headline and you have to retract it. So what do? 2 hours after the call, they change the headline. And now the headline comes out and about 2 hours later, they come out and they basically say that Trump is, let me see if I got this right. Donald Trump says states should decide abortion policy, avoids talk of a national ban. Those are markedly different headlines. If you want to know why people don't trust the media, right? That's why, right? We've already established, if you've listened to this show over, the year or so or more we've been on, we've documented for you how the federal government has had the ability to manipulate social media and go in and pressure them to change the algorithms. They pressure reporters to change the headlines. It's all about controlling the narrative. And as we talked about, it's all about controlling the minority or the tyranny of the minority that is in power that doesn't want to give it up. So this still comes under the heading of get Trump at any cost. Moving on, something related. The State Department, first of all, the Navy, let me back up, again, has missed their quota for applicants. Why? Well, probably because they're having LGBTQ advertisers or promo ads to try to get people into the military service. But don't worry. There is a proposal in Congress to have illegal immigrants serve in the military, defending a country they have no allegiance to and a document, the Constitution, they know nothing about. But that's been put forward by Senator Dick Durbin and others as a way towards citizenship. Great. Take away guns from American law-abiding Americans, but give them to illegal immigrants who broke the law to get here and don't know what they're protecting other than the fact that if the government tells them to shoot and kill somebody, watch out. The State Department has a new diversity chief. And her name is, let me see if I got this right, is Carr, C-A-R-R Johnson. She is the State Department's new diversity chief officer, whatever the title is. This is a woman, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, who has called America a failed historic model and has demanded the destruction of tradition at every juncture and altar on the altar of anti-racism. Her desire is to build a workforce that reflects America at the State Department. Now, first of all, think about that. The job of the State Department is not to build a workforce that reflects America. The job of the State Department is diplomatic relations as part of our foreign policy to keep America safe, right? So when you think about it, the State Department should be really working hand in hand with the Defense Department, right? Because if you have to go to war, that's the Defense Department. And hopefully if the State Department's doing their job properly, we don't go to war, so we don't need the military side. We have the diplomatic side. Two sides to the same coin. Not really rocket science here, right? Forgive me while I get a little quick drink of water here. So Secretary Blinken has now installed this woman. She had a DEI consulting firm, but here's where it gets really interesting. In a 2020 seminar, she said the following: because we live and work within systems so deeply rooted in patriarchy and colonialism and racism and otherism, I don't really know what otherism is. Maybe someone can tell me that. But otherism, it's out there. And otherism, we tend to be very resistant to shifts and changes. It's very uncomfortable for many colleagues. A culture of misogyny has allowed men to act without consequence. I would argue when you defund the laws, you're allowing the public to act without consequence. When people sit on a federal bridge and don't get arrested and you don't enforce the law, there are no consequences. So I do think this is the kettle calling the pot black. But remember, tyranny of the minority. It's okay for them to do it. It's not okay for us to do it. So going back to men are acting without consequences, and it becomes part of what we believe is normal. In order to make any change, we've literally got to be about working to dismantling the traditional structure at every juncture. America is a failed historical model, right? And it goes on. So, and by the way, the one line in here that I love, the rationale for all of this crap is in order to save us all. Sorry, I'm just checking my notes here. Lord Benjamin, if you need me, you're going to have to break in because I can't read and talk at the same time. I am multi-talented. I'm just not that multi-talented or multitasking talented. So in order to save us all, we must be prepared to change, Carr Johnson wrote. What does that sound like to you? That sounds like, wait for it, for the safety of all, right? Isn't that the logic? Well, for the safety of all, we all have to take a vaccine. So much for my body, my choice. For the safety of all, we all have to wear masks. Actually, it's wear masks, right? For the safety of all, we should all stop eating meat because killing cows is bad for the environment and the environment and climate change is going to kill the planet. So for the safety of all, we all have to do, I mean, just fill in the blanks here, folks, right? Oh, and by the way, for the safety of all, you can't own that gun because you are a threat to the community and you can't own the gun. Do you see how all this rolls downhill? It's all connected and it's all about being triggered. It's the tyranny of the majority, right? You got to look this woman up. New State Department, State Department diversity chief. I mean, the things that she says, we cannot have equity without dismantling structural racism, patriarchy, and heterosexism. It will start with a movement that compels us to ask uncomfortable questions. Oh, and of course, she throws in white supremacy. So it's also, and by the way, can someone tell me what intersectionality is? Because I don't understand. Feminist leadership must be intersectional. Understanding and addressing intersection identities, needs. I mean, I can't even read this. It makes me so crazy. And by the way, the last thing I'm going to leave you with is, so it's okay if you're a woman. It's just not okay if you're a white woman. Because what she basically goes on, that female-directed diversity initiatives allow too many white women to advance, purportedly at the expense of women of color. I sit here and go, you can't make this shit up. I want to tie all this together because it does intersect, not intersectionality, with the anti-Semitism you see in this country, right? And Dr. Laurie Fineman is correct. If they drive the Jews into the sea, right, from the river to the sea, for all my Christian listeners, you're next, because this is not about the Jews. It's about Judeo-Christian values. This is also about transforming society where the minority will then take control and power. And that's what this really is. It is the tyranny of the minority through all these ways, large and small, through media, right? You see even the small ways that they tweak. There's no such thing anymore as objective journalism. It's all opinion journalism. Eduardo Murrow is turning over in his grave. The sacred trust that journalists used to have is dead. They're not even pretending to be unbiased, except when someone calls them out and proves that they are biased is when they get all up in arms and all up in airs. So you have all, whether it's cultural, whether it's academia, all of these things. So remember, you are allowed to be triggered. If something makes you feel unsafe and uncomfortable, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. Let them know. This is all about the silent majority speaking up. And remember, I don't care whether you like Trump or not. You don't want to like Trump? Don't vote for him. But I'm telling you now, they're going after Trump. And if they can come after him, they can come after any of us. And that's where this is leading. Same thing with Israel. If you do not toe the line of this new morality or this new wokeism, then you are no longer an ally. And we don't really care what happens to you. And of course, because it's the Jews, it doesn't really matter. Anyways, because they're an oppressor country. There's a reason that Iran calls America the great Satan and calls Israel a little Satan, because we are connected. And American values are Israeli values, and Israeli values are American values, and both of those are Judeo-Christian values. Starting to connect the dots. Thank you so much for joining us today for Of the People. Erica, we miss you. I think our listeners miss you, because I got to listen to Robert rant again. Hopefully next week you'll be back. And then we can be back to our usual routine. But thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back next week. You're listening to Of the People. I'm Robert Chernin. We'll see you later.